Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Oh, that is not how we should open the episode. I'm so sorry.
Downloadable radio shows.
Jesus.
Okay. Hey, guys. Welcome back to the worst year ever. Here we are, your worst crew.
And a critical part of the worst year ever is badly introducing the podcast, the worst year ever.
It really is the worst part of every show, I think.
Yeah, it should be. It should be. Beginnings, you know, should be terrible. It's like birth. Birth, is a painful process.
Which you can speak to.
It lets you know right away. It's like, here's life. Yeah. Life is pain. Here you go. And this show, here's the intro. The year is pain. And this intro gives you an idea of what to expect.
Yeah. I think it does. You nail it just, every time. And in a similar way, you know, I really understand childbirth now because of introducing podcasts.
Oh,
you know,
now
I understand the pain of childbirth.
You feel like you could do it, right?
I feel like I do it every week.
It sounds so easy. Exactly. Yeah. You do the exact same thing every single week, a couple of times.
I love the two male hosts talking about childbirth.
Katie, could you please, for a second, Robert,
white men
discuss
said things
how easy
that they
childbirth
shouldn't have
is
said this week, Robert?
I'm just angling for that sweet, sweet cancellation so I can finally sleep.
Katie, you want to take the lead up top? Just because this is not going well.
I think it's going great.
So, yeah. A lot of news this week.
There's so much news this week.
Seattle has seceded from the United States, according to Fox News.
Wow.
Alternatively,
South Carolina has been threatening it every year.
Yeah.
But they fucking did it.
Wild if true.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone,
yes,
or CHAZ, as a lot of people call it. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, what do y'all, based on kind of what you've heard, what do you think's going on up there?
It sounds incredible. All right, look, there's, based on what things I've heard, depends on where you're looking. If I'm looking on Twitter and the people I follow, it seems like a goddamn utopia. It seems like a pretty beautiful expression of protesting, of community, of coming together and creating something special and safe, you know, relatively speaking. And then if you look at the right-wing media, you think it is the epitome of chaos and anarchy. So there's
Mad Max.
Two very different narratives coming forward here. You've been on the ground there.
Yeah, I spent a couple days there. And I would say, were you to go there, you the listener or you my co-hosts, your overwhelming impression would be like, oh, this is like a big unpermitted block party. Like it's like a music festival
like,
little bit. Yeah, like it's
kind of like
pretty
an Occupy vibe. Too. It's
right,
just like people hanging out in a space, right?
Yeah. The difference between it and Occupy is the fact that they did kick out the cops and like
oh,
that's
yeah,
been
for
a little,
sure. I just mean like the general
at
vibe
some point.
Of like
yeah.
what yeah. well, yeah. Well,
like, outdoor.
Yeah. So what's actually going on here? Have y'all ever heard of the term a temporary autonomous zone?
Not before now.
So this has been like a big part of my life since about age 20. I started hanging out and helping to establish temporary autonomous zones all around the United States. And this is a very complicated history. So temporary autonomous zones have existed for centuries, perhaps thousands of years. But the name itself and the kind of ideology that's formed around it was invented in, I think, the early 90s by... This is such a weird story. So the term temporary autonomous zone and kind of like the organized ideas around it were created by a pedophile anarchist sorcerer named
what?
Hakim Bey. Yeah.
There's a lot you just threw at me right there.
Yeah, a pedophile anarchist sorcerer came up with the term. And he said... So... Hakim Bey, his real name is Peter Lamborn Wilson, and he's like an
Come
anarchist.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah. He's an anarchist, so, author, and poet, and again, a sorcerer. He was born not independently wealthy, like, but independently poor. So, like, he was born with enough family money that he could not work and live as a poor person forever. And so he's just kind of always written wild nonsense and also studied Sufism. And he, like, not all nonsense. Like, it's weird because you read Hakim Bey and it's this mix of, like, some really beautiful lines and then, like, utter nonsense. And often, like,
and the
it's
pedophile
this
stuff.
Yeah, and the pedophile stuff. Yeah, we'll get into all of it. The sorcery stuff is like, I don't know, if you're into like Order Templo Orientis or like any of this, like Hakim Bey was into magic, sure. And he's still alive. And so like all of his essays include like spells and stuff. So it's weird stuff to read. But there's some interesting lines in there, and it like the fact that this guy's so problematic makes it very frustrating. Like, so one of the lines that has always like stuck with me from his initial essay, Temporary Autonomous Zones, is the universe wants to play. Those who refuse out of dry spiritual greed and choose pure contemplation forfeit their humanity. Those who refuse out of dull anguish, those who hesitate, lose their chance at divinity. Those who mold themselves blind masks of ideas and thrash around seeking some proof of their own solidity end by seeing out of dead men's eyes. That's a good line. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with Hakim Bey is, as I have mentioned a couple of times, is he is a fucking pedophile. I don't know that he's actually committed pedophilia, because I don't think he's ever been arrested, but he has written lengthy essays about why it would be cool. The idea of a temporary autonomous zone, and again, Bey didn't invent the idea, but he kind of was the first person to, in an organized way, describe this thing that's been happening for a long time. And I'm going to his idea was basically, you can't have a more free society. You can't push for a more free society with people who haven't tasted freedom. And because it's impossible to be free in the police state we live in, people should seek to create temporarily free spaces so that they can experience freedom and then go on to like experiment with new methods of living that they can bring back into the world outside of it. And this is where fucking Burning Man came from. Like initially, like,
okay. Yeah.
Like Burning Man now, you know, people make fun of it because like it's become this big tech industry thing where it's a billionaire playground. But back when it started, there were no fucking cops out there. They did it in a bunch of different locations. Everybody had fucking machine guns. Like it was a very intense and very political thing. And it was this idea of, what if we get thousands of people out into the middle of nowhere with no fucking cops and no fucking state, and we experiment with how to take care of our own healthcare, how to take care of, you know, our own resource distribution power. Like, we do that for a while to prove that we can do it on our own and learn things about ourselves and things about how society can be. And temporary autonomous zones are both a great venue for a party, like raves in a lot of cases, especially like early illegal raves, are a temporary autonomous zone where you're like taking over like some abandoned warehouse and making it into a place temporarily that is free, and then, you know, leaving when the cops come. But another example of it, like probably the most significant recent example of a temporary autonomous zone used for protest, was the Maidan in Kyiv, in the capital of Ukraine, in 2013 and 14, where activists occupied the center of the capital, built an ice fortress around it, and were sieged by the police for weeks, and fought the police hand to hand for weeks at a time until they overthrew the government. And basically, you know, it started with them being like, we are, our president is trying to become a dictator. We are living in a police state. We are going to take over the center of the city, reject their rule of law, and fight their enforcers, you know, until they either kill us or we beat them. And they did beat them. Standing Rock would be another example in the United States of a temporary autonomous zone. You know, the actual giant protest camps that they had were kind of outside of the control of the state for a period of time.
Right.
I found a good definition of a temporary autonomous zone written by someone who's not a pedophile in the Interaction Institute for Social
Thank
Change.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, quote, just waiting.
A temporary autonomous zone is a liberated area of land, time, or imagination where one can be for something and not just against, and where new ways of being human together can be explored and experimented with. Locating itself in the cracks and fault lines in the global grid of control and alienation, a TAZ is an eruption of free culture where life is experienced at maximum intensity. It should feel like an exceptional party where for a brief moment our desires are made manifest and we all become the creators of the art of everyday life.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. This is what
I also
I've
like that
my 20s
it can be
doing.
In your imagination.
Yeah, and it can be on the there's people who can argue that like no, actually anonymous, like the initial hacker collective that started up, you know, back in the mid aughts, were establishing like digital temporary mm-hmm. autonomous zones mm-hmm. at times. Like there's not a super strict definition of what a TAZ is. And I would say that about half of the time I was in the Chaz in Seattle, it was a temporary autonomous zone. And then the police came back and people didn't kick them out. And then it stopped being a temporary autonomous zone. That is my one line. If there's fucking cops, it's not a TAZ, which is why I don't consider Burning Man to be a TAZ anymore. But there are regional burns that don't fucking let the cops in that are TAZs. That's my own personal line. Like people can disagree with it, but my wording is it's not autonomous if there's fucking cops.
So when the cops came back, did they stay?
It's kind of hard to tell what's happening. So the police are still saying that they're like kind of moving out of the precinct. I don't think it's really clear what's going to happen yet. Police have been kind of in and out of the precinct since then. There have been attempts to stop groups of police from coming in that have been successful and unsuccessful. And like, there's broad agreement within the Chaz that they don't want cops to ever come back. But also not broad agreement on how to do that, because at a certain point, if the cops choose to reoccupy their precinct, you either let them or you fight them. Mm-hmm. And this is something they've been. There's a lot of autonomous zones in Europe, neighborhoods in like Christiania in I think fucking Denmark. There's that neighborhood in Athens in Greece that's like an mm-hmm. anarchist squat neighborhood. I've been to a couple in Slovenia, Social Center Rož. Which are like these little autonomous zones in cities. And sometimes they do get into massive fistfights with the police over whether or not they can continue to exist. I was having a conversation with a friend who was telling me about like meeting someone in like this squat in Sweden and like ask like her being like, yeah, about once a year, the police will try to break it up. You know, this has been going on for like 20 years. And he was like, what do you do when the police come to break it up? And she was like, we fight them. Like we have to beat them up. Like, yeah, that's what happens.
We don't want them to be there.
So we don't want them to be there. So we have to kick the shit out of them or they kick the shit out of us and stop it like that. And so that's obviously more complicated in the United States because our police are so much more violent. And I think protest in general in this country has less of an appetite for physical confrontation than like in France, they don't give a shit. Like French French protesters will not just riot, but will like, all right, it's time to like fist fight all of our cops. Like,
yeah.
there are like firefighters regularly fight the police in France. And one of the ways firefighters do it is they will put on all their firefighting gear, light themselves on fire and charge into a crowd of police.
That is- what?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
There's some wild videos of firefighters just like, let's beat the shit out of some cops.
God, I don't want to live in Europe.
It fucking rules. So anyway, like that's kind of what a TAZ is. And obviously, there's a lot that's problematic in sort of the history of the ideology. Because like Hakim Bey, the guy who formalized the idea... Part of what he wanted Taz's for is like a place where he could molest children. So
yeah, no, it's very clear. Like, there's a lot of like, it's a that overlap with like libertarians, where it's like, what, why do you want to be able?
It's
to
like,
do
oh,
anything?
The law you don't like is the one that says you can't fuck kids. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. But also, you know, Tazes have existed again since way before Hakim Bey. You can think of the Paris Commune, you know, the Commune in Munich. Some of like these uprisings that happened after World War I, where like neighborhoods would be taken over, often by socialists. Like these are all kind of like temporary autonomous zones. And there were cases. You can also look at the some of the mining camps that were established by union striking workers in places like Pennsylvania and West Virginia had aspects of this to them, as did like different kind of parties thrown during the hippie area where like people would all like the stuff that like turned into Woodstock eventually. So like this has obviously been going on for a long time. Bey was just kind of attaching a name to it. He was good at attaching names to things. For example, another thing that Hakeem Bey named that I really admire is the concept of poetic terrorism, which is terrorism that, instead of using violence, uses art. It forces art upon people for the purpose of terrorizing and changing them in the society.
Oh, so like a Banksy.
No, because that's
just... It was mostly a joke, yeah, but yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I'm glad that you considered what I said.
So a great example of poetic terrorism, in the early aughts, we did an article about this on Cracked at one point. There was this lady who showed up at a fucking, this lady like and a crew rolled up in like a limousine during like one of the big crazy like Christmas shopping days at like, I think it was like a mall or it was some sort of big box store. And like came in and talked to the manager, and they announced over the loudspeaker that like a wealthy donor would be like paying for everyone's purchases in like 2 hours or something. So everybody who was like lined up in 2 hours with purchases would get them paid for by this random rich person. And like it sparked a fucking riot in the shopping center, and people were like fighting each other and destroying shit. And while it was all happening, those people just left. They were just like, that would be an example of poetic terrorism.
Okay.
And it's a great concept to have a name for, but Hakeem Bey himself was actually really bad about knowing what poetic terrorism would be, because like one of the examples he came up with for an act of poetic terrorism was pooping on the floor of a bank, which I wouldn't call poetic terrorism.
Oh,
I would call pooping on the floor of a bank.
Yeah, I mean...
yeah. Like, that doesn't change anything. You're just shitting in a bank, dude.
That's, like such a disappointing example like, a beautiful-sounding concept, and, like, that's just juvenile humor.
That's just pooping in a bank, dude. Like, you're not changing shit.
That's what babies do.
Yeah, like, the whole, like, you know, yeah.
At best, it's really bad art, right?
Yeah. Yeah, fucking Hakeem Bey. He's such a piece
of
shit.
Come on, man. Come on.
But really good at naming things, because both temporary autonomous zone or TAZ and poetic terrorism are great terms for things. So Hakeem Bey is, a problematic dude that also you kind of have to at least be aware of if you're going to talk about these things, because his impact is pretty broad on the counterculture. That's all we should say about Hakeem Bey. So yeah, I went to the Chaz. I would say about half the time I was there, it was what I would describe. Like my partner Beatrix and I, my work partner, and who like went rolled up there with me. She had been like arrested the night before in Portland, while clearly displaying her press pass and working for me as a stringer, which we're fighting currently, and we will continue to fight because it's bullshit. So like she went from being tear gas the night, we all got tear gas the night before that. She got arrested. She got out, and then we drive to this autonomous zone. And like the first thing we see is the defaced East Precinct, where they had like spray painted and like blocked out over the police department thing with like People's Department, and like they'd fenced off the whole thing so nobody could get into the building. And there were like people, you know, giving speeches and putting up graffiti, and like it was this incredible murals being made on every wall. All of the businesses in the neighborhood had just like opened their doors and their bathrooms to people for services. Like, there's this big taco shop in the middle of it next to the park, that opened up its whole front courtyard area for like medical tents and stuff, for like this free clinic that's forming. There's like a shitload of free food. Good music. It was just like chill as hell. No fucking cops. Functioning on a gift economy. So like people really trying to not use money for anything other than like the local businesses. Because there is this understanding that's like, and what I think was smart about Seattle, because like in Portland, people are talking about trying to form a TAZ, and like the places they've suggested have been like a couple of parks or PSU, like the college campus, both of which would be terrible places to do a temporary autonomous zone. One of the reasons that the Seattle Hill or the Capitol Hill one has worked as much as it has is they didn't just go into the middle of nowhere and set up a bunch of tents. They went into a neighborhood that was broadly sympathetic to their aims, and they said, we're kicking the police out of this neighborhood. And it's a neighborhood where people live and work. And so it's a functional chunk of society already. And they're just taking that and experimenting with certain other things around the edges of it. Anyway, it was really like the first night was like thoroughly intoxicating. And there was definitely this feeling I felt in a couple of places in the world during like moments of revolution where like this kind of sense that anything is possible. And so we had a great first night. I will say, fuzzed out the edges of kind of the intersection of journalism and activism by volunteering to do a night guard shift. So I stood armed mm-hmm. watch on the barricades. You know, I had a gun, my partner, like we did, you know, I wanted to like do something. I wanted to like volunteer some time out there. And that's a thing I know how to do. So we did that. And that was interesting. So yeah.
Yeah, I am interested in that. So one of the things I was doing to prepare for this was just kind of gauging some of the right-wing media, mm-hmm. Donald Trump's responses to that. And we can get into it in a bit. But, you know, the way they're framing it is, you know, cultural revolution. actually, I want to talk to you. You make it sound like the businesses are fairly supportive of what's happening
yeah.
in the autonomous zone. Here's a Fox News headline. Seattle Autonomous Zone has armed guards, local businesses being threatened with extortion, police say. And the first sentence is, Seattle police say they've received reports of armed guards. You know, we've heard anecdotally reports of citizens and businesses being asked to pay a fee to operate within this area. Anyway, you talking about this armed guard situation of what you volunteered to do is something I think is important to touch on, is that there's some community self-policing. People are taking shifts and volunteering and monitoring.
It's not self-policing because there's no policing going on.
Sure,
it was self-defense because there have been threats made. People have like threatened to shoot it up and threatened to attack people and drive cars into it. And that's what we were doing at the barricades, is basically we weren't searching, checking people's IDs. We weren't searching people. People were free to like come and go without it being asked a single question. Like there was no attempt to mm-hmm. interfere with individual people. We were watching out for like a group of armed right-wing militiamen or somebody trying to drive a car through the barricades to hurt people. Like that was the goal.
Yeah.
Is like,
yeah.
You know, there's people making threats. We should probably be just kind of hanging around. And there was nothing unlawful about it. And in Washington, you're allowed to open carry firearms. Mm-hmm. And that's what everyone was doing. So it was, and the specific thing that like the claims that businesses are being, I talked to a couple of different business owners in the Chaz, and none of them had complaints about being shaken down. That most of them were making a bunch of money because there's way more people in Capitol Hill right now than normal.
Pandemic being raging around, you know.
Yeah, that rumor started because of Andy Ngo an unsubstantiated article that he published in the Post Millennial. And then the Seattle police took that and reported that was what they were reporting on. And the Seattle police had to later walk it back and say they had seen no evidence of that because it was a lie.
That's how it works. God,
yeah.
What a fucking scumbag.
In a general rule, like this idea that like there's fucking, this is an anarchist project. I met a number of anarchists there. And certainly like the idea of a temporary autonomous zone is very near and dear to anarchist hearts. Most of the people in the Chaz, most of the people doing stuff in the Chaz were not anarchists. I would describe most of them as broadly liberal, you know, maybe more radicalized as a result of getting tear gassed for 2 weeks than they had been previously. But like,
sure.
The vast majority of the people in the Chaz were not committed anarchists. Now it's Seattle, so, you know, maybe 20% of them are anarchists, but like most of them are just like liberal lefty people who had enough of the fucking police. And most of them have, you know, there's definitely folks there who are anti-capitalist, and I suspect kind of a broad desire to reform or end capitalism among the people there. But nobody wanted to fuck with like these local businesses. Nobody was like angry at the ramen shop or the Mexican restaurant, right? Like there were no business. Yeah. There's no business. One of the reasons it was a good place to pick is all of the businesses in the Chaz were like nice, independent little businesses doing stuff that nobody has any issue with. Like, if you have an issue, like I don't like capitalism, but I think we should have ramen shops. Like I think we should have
delicious.
People.
Yeah, they weren't camping out in Target. It was
and so
speaking of ramen shops,
ramen.
We gotta take a break for ads.
Yes, this podcast is sponsored by the concept of ramen. So if you support ramen, please mail $20 to Japan.
Promo code yum yum yum.
Yeah, just write that on a letter and stick it in the mailbox and see what happens.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back.
We're back.
Yum, yum, yum.
So full of ramen now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sponsor the concept of ramen.
Ramtheon, right?
Another thing that I have seen painted exclusively with right-wing media that I'd love you to speak to is there's been a variety of headlines about, you know, differing ideological ideas. Well, you know, fractions within Chaz, you know, black organizers of Seattle doubt the sincerity of white protesters, or, you know, Black Lives Matters feels like white protesters have hijacked their message, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's there like, and I do want to point out, like, number one, what a tiny section of Seattle this is.
Yeah.
Like, we drove through the city and most of it's perfectly normal. Like, there's like six blocks in a very large city that this is happening in. I will say it was actually a really diverse crowd at Capitol Hill, and a number of the people who were doing organizey things that I talked to, and like I filmed at one point like a public meeting that they had about what to do when the police reoccupied the building, and like the people who were definitely taking the lead in organizing that discussion and talking and like stating their opinions were majority black. And the white activists in that crowd were doing a pretty good job of like, we want to listen to what they have to say and like and kind of take their lead in this. So I definitely, like, Seattle is majority a whiter city than most large cities in the United States. I would say the Chaz, from my experience, was more diverse than Seattle in general. But it is like a situation where, yeah, you're not just talking about a Black Lives Matter thing at this point. You are talking about now, like, it's making sort of the case more broad. Like, we're trying to do police abolition here and trying to establish an area where there are not police to see if we can make that work. And that, you know, I guess, like, I can see how people who are particularly, like, Black Lives Matter activists, how some of them might be like, that's either watering down or distracting from our central message. At the same time, I think we're a big country and there's room for experiments like this within the broader context of this uprising against police. And I think there's, I know a significant number of black activists and organizers who are very attached to the Chaz and think this is very important and are dedicating a lot of time to it. So I don't think it's fair to just like say this is like white kids doing this, you know? Because that's not what I saw on the ground. There were a bunch of white kids there too, absolutely. But, like, that's not what I saw on the ground.
Right-wing media not fair?
Yeah.
Well, that's what, you'll see that a lot with just, like, any sort of way to discredit what's going on.
And they're incredibly scared of this. Like, it was evident when I came back to Portland. Obviously, like, I think there's a lot of kids, and especially a lot of white kids, in the Portland activist scene who were like kind of pissed that Seattle did this first and wanted their own autonomous zone. And that's happened. There's been like three or four attempts around the country so far, a couple of which are like ongoing to establish autonomous zones free of police in a couple of cities. And there was talk about doing that on Saturday night in Portland. There was going to be like people were going to meet up at the Justice Center and like have a meeting about where to do it and then march off and occupy some territory. And it was canceled. That plan was canceled at the last minute when like a bunch of local activists of color were like, what the fuck are you doing? Number one, announcing that over social media 6 hours ahead of time is so fucking stupid. And number two, like, nobody consulted like us about this and like this. So anyway, there was a whole kerfuffle over it and the plan was backed away from and there was just a normal protest that night. But the police, there were like four times as many cops as normal. Like they brought in cops from all over the rest of the state on like short notice in order to fill Portland up so that they could stop this thing if anyone actually did attempt to create an autonomous zone because they're scared as hell of this idea. I think scared beyond the actual radical potential of the Chaz by the idea. Like there was just a case in I forget which there was like a little 50-person BLM rally in somewhere in the rural United States that like several hundred like MAGA protesters showed up armed to like assault and shove around because they were terrified of what the news has told them as this like anarchist hellhole that's eaten all of Seattle. It does say something about the power of these concepts and about the power of this idea that even something as mild as the Chaz, which is, again, more of a block party than a revolution, that it, but just the vague idea that, like, oh, yeah, we're saying you can't have cops in this neighborhood, like, that fucking terrifies these people.
Right.
And that's really interesting to me. The fear with which this has been met by corners of our country says a lot. Because, again, it's a block party.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a threat to their way of life. It's the threat to what we perceive as being possible.
Yeah, they don't want people to get a taste.
Yeah, like the autonomous zones that I've spent a lot of time in are like, what if we did away with any forms of central authority, like generated our own power for a while, like had no police, had no firefighters, had no, like, did all of that ourselves in a system where capitalism and any sort of use of money is explicitly forbidden. And the Chaz is kind of more just is a different kind of autonomous zone, because they're not trying to completely change society. They're basically just saying, like the what's at least what I witnessed there was people being like, what if we had kind of the same society we have, but free food for people who need it and no cops? Like that's
and,
like,
yeah, the medical attention if you need it. And, yeah.
But, like, yeah, still businesses, you know, still the other normal stuff, you know, street parking's free if you can find it. And there was a good amount of street parking. But, like, it wasn't like, it's not like the Paris Commune, right? Like, they're not declaring war on the state to destroy it. People are basically, most of the people there, I think, were like, yeah, what if we just get rid of the cops and we're made it a little easier to be homeless by making sure there's, like, free food and clinics around.
Yeah.
And
also,
that's what I saw.
Just
yeah.
All the people who are mad about this and terrified also hate the government.
Yeah.
And would support this kind of thing if it were for a slightly different reason, probably.
Yeah, it is weird because, like, the stuff that I believed when I was a conservative, I wouldn't have found this to be out of line with my ideology at the time, which was like, people should just be left alone to do their own shit.
Get the government out of my business. We're having a party. Go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or join the party. It's up to you.
The president's response has been.
Oh, yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
You guys
want to
talk about that?
Yeah.
What did he say? A interview with Fox News. What do we have here with Harris Faulkner? This is Donald Trump. You know, saying that his administration is not going to let Seattle be occupied by anarchists. If there were more toughness, you wouldn't have the kind of devastation that you had in Minneapolis and in Seattle. I mean, let's see what's going on in Seattle. I'll tell you, if they don't straighten that situation out, we're going to straighten it out. And just so many tweets about it. Yeah, you know, Mayor of Seattle and Jay Inslee are being taunted and played at a level that our great country has never seen before. Take back your city now. If you don't do it, I will. This is not a game. These ugly anarchists must be stopped immediately. Move fast. You know, law and order tweets. I also love domestic terrorists have taken over Seattle, run by the radical left Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, domestic
radical left Democrats.
Domestic terrorists. But the KKK is not a terrorist.
No, but you know who's a terrorist is the people who showed up with several hundred pastrami sandwiches to give free sandwiches out.
Fuck those guys.
A classic
disgusting act.
I remember in Mosul when ISIS threw pastrami sandwiches at us. I had real flashbacks to my last encounter with terrorism.
Oh, your PTSD was triggered.
My pastrami traumatic stress disorder. Absolutely. it is one of the, like, again, like the Tazes I've been involved with have been, I think, kind of more politically radical than the Chaz, which is a pretty mild autonomous zone, you know, by comparison to some, particularly by comparison to like Rojava or the Maidan, or even kind of Standing Rock. But it like just hearing people talk about it, like it's devastated Seattle. It's like I ate at a lovely Bip and Bop place that is just in the middle of this.
Right,
like my partner and I got like a bunch of food and some beers, and we sat in the middle of a park on a nice sunny day and listened to a mix of speeches and street music and watched people paint a mural.
Sounds
and
incredible.
It was lovely. It was a very nice afternoon.
Also,
American Taliban.
Like said, yeah. like those businesses are actually getting a lot more customers right now, probably than the rest of Seattle because of the pandemic. You know?
I met a very, and bought a number of drinks from a very happy bartender who was yeah. like, yeah, I've been getting great tips. Like I talked to a couple of folks who were like stylists at a hair salon and they're like, yeah, our salon actually still isn't open yet because of COVID-19. But once this happened, we like emailed or called our manager and we're like, can we open up the salon so that people can have access to the bathrooms and so that we can use it as like a community, like basically a place to dispense like things that people need, you know, like food and yeah. sanitation supplies and stuff. And their boss was like, absolutely. And so like these two like stylists were just kind of there on their own time opening up the shop so that it could be part of this.
Incredible.
Yeah, and yeah, they weren't even making any money off of it at that point because again, yeah. like because of the plague, they weren't doing haircuts. But yeah, right. it was great.
I was actually going to ask about that. What's the social distance mask mm-hmm. COVID concern vibe there? Like,
most people were masked. The social distancing, I will certainly say, not as distant as we ought to be, because uh-huh. it's been very crowded a lot of times.
Yeah.
But people are pretty good about masks. You know, it did come out recently that just yesterday, I think the news dropped that only 1% of Washington's or of Seattle's COVID-19 cases traced back to the protests, which started like 2 weeks ago. So we do have yeah. some good data on that now. And in Oregon, we had like our biggest one day new COVID-19 cases, like 250 cases, but only 5 of them were people who had attended protests. So it does yeah. seem like the fact that people are, despite everything else, masked up in these is
right. Right.
Well, pretty, the masks yeah. cuts transmission down to like 1%.
Yeah.
If you're interacting with someone and you're both wearing a mask, yeah. that's what does it. It's not one person yeah. doing it. So in general, yeah. you know, yeah,
it does seem like we can. It does seem like one of the things we're learning about COVID-19 is that we can reasonably safely all be out in public together if everybody's wearing a mask.
Like if yeah. right, if we do the precautions.
I actually yeah. I didn't read this. Yeah. I heard somebody talking about it, but there was some study of if everybody everywhere wore masks for 3 weeks, it would be wiped out.
Yeah, yeah, stunning. It is. It would be very simple to have been done with this with a minimal impact on the economy, but that America's not going to do the simple yeah. thing. We're going to have a real dumb fight about it for no good reason.
Yeah, what if we make it worse?
And that's come why on. I am proud to be an American, where at least I know I am free to elongate a pandemic by months. And I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me
yeah.
to spread the plague to them.
Gladly
I don't
stand.
Care
and I'll proudly
about the
stand up
side.
Next to you, and I will lick your eyeball today.
Ew.
Because freedom means, you know, the plague. I don't know. We were doing
yeah.
a little
no,
bit of
freedom means having to stand up for that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, licking eyeballs is.
That's what I miss
it's
most about
time
the before
for an
time.
Ad break just on
I'll
that
just
note.
You know
say,
who's
going to
lick
just...
your eyes? Yeah,
Robert, I'm gonna have nightmares about that tonight. I'm having
yeah,
the
too.
Craziest COVID dreams lately. I do not have a night where I don't have intense, just COVID revolution, all of it, just dreams that are intense, and that will be in yeah. my dreams. Now it's time for an ad.
Yeah, speaking of dreams, these products are a dream.
Ooh, well done.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together.
We're back
yay.
From the ad.
So
ad.
I think that's all we have to say about the Chaz.
About the
and
Chaz.
Autonomous zones. Let's talk about Ron Perlman for just a brief second.
Ron Perlman.
And then we'll get
that's...
on to something important. Yeah.
Okay.
Goodness.
Yeah. Someone on Twitter, Menshevik M, summarized it really well, and I want to read his summary. So Ron Perlman called United States Congressman and possible accessory to sex crimes Jim Jordan ugly, which caused United States Senator Ted Cruz to challenge Perlman to wrestle Jordan. Perlman responded that he'd wrestle Cruz instead, for which Cruz called him a pussy.
Interesting.
It's a good brief summary of what's happened, which is a very funny
yeah.
thing.
A moment of levity in a time yeah. of darkness.
Yeah,
it's
I love
beautiful.
It. It's awesome.
Yeah. Because also it stemmed from he called Jim Jordan ugly, but also he'd been fighting with Matt Gaetz for a while online.
Yeah.
Because Matt Gaetz is trying to introduce a law that makes the U.S. soccer team have to stand up during the national anthem.
He sure
because
has.
Because he's a real boring fascist.
I can't tell you all how happy I am. How happy I am with the existence of Ron Perlman.
Oh yeah.
Because he's just kind of, like he's a Democrat, and I think we probably would disagree on a lot of stuff politically. But I appreciate him repeatedly challenging Ted Cruz to a fight.
It's so amazing. Because, like, yeah. it's because, like, Ron Perlman, okay, it's just a guy, and, like, he's tweeting
about...
He's
just Hellboy, yeah.
He's just Hellboy calling a congressman ugly. And then this other guy shows up, and he doesn't even say, like, leave my friend alone, I'll beat you up. He's like, leave my friend alone, my friend could beat you up.
Yeah.
And he challenged him to fight his buddy.
Yeah, and I don't even know if he'd talk to his buddy about it.
Like, right, it's like not, like, it's, that's something, he challenged him, like, well, you gotta do a charity, so, like, did you discuss this ahead of time? And it's just, like, as soon as Ron comes back with, actually, like, why don't I fight you instead, Ted's like, you're just scared to wrestle him. It's like, well, then, Ted, why aren't you responding to the part where he said you should fight him? It's just, it's a perfect distillation of, like, everything is wrong. Not everything is wrong, but, like,
no, not
Donald Trump, like, he is, like, he has destroyed the GOP and, like, whittled them down into these bizarre little online freaks.
Yeah, they've just, like,
they're just obsessed with posting, and they can't get enough of, like, they're just, like, asking the blue checks if they're triggered, and, like, doing their little Princess Bride gifts with some Daily Wire intern and, like, challenging, like, Deborah Messing to, like, arm wrestle each other. It's so weird. They've devolved into these bizarre little freaks. And it's
also impossible. It's like that's I feel like I'm going mad when I see the way congressmen just talk now.
They're U.S. senators, and they're so fucking online. It's so pathetic and weird.
Like Ted Cruz, I have literally watched people on 4chan comment, like, more reasonably to in similar situations than you are right now. Like, there are 14-year-olds on the internet who are more mature than you, and you have collapsed the U.S. economy before because you got angry. Like, you have that power, and you're shitposting. Like, what is wrong with you?
Unbelievable. So much is wrong with him and them now. It's so funny. And, like, he just can't get enough. There was a night where he's deleted all of these posts, but some fucking college student, this woman, it's like 20 years old, tweeted, like, Ted Cruz is wrong and ugly, or something like that.
Yeah.
She didn't tag him. She didn't do anything. It was a screenshot. And Ted Cruz, within a minute, retweeted it and, like, had all of his weird little followers, like, pile on her and, like, challenge her to a debate about free speech. And she ended up deleting it because, like, Ted Cruz retweeted me for some weird reason. And then he retweeted her again, being like, she blocked me. She's a coward. It's like, no, she, like, deleted her tweet because a senator was harassing her online. You fucking weirdo. I'm sorry.
There was a weird moment. God, I think it was like a year ago now, where some other U.S. senator, like, posted about going into, I think it was a fucking pho place, and hearing a bunch of anarchists having a conversation about how they'd like the world to be. And, like, he said something like, you know, this is what I would have said if I'd, you know, had an argument with them or something. Like, this is what I would have asked them. It's like, number one, you had that opportunity and you chose not to engage with them because you're a coward. And, like, Ted Cruz retweeted it. And then a couple of my friends, because this happened, I think, somewhere in the Dallas area, were like, that was us. Like, we were just, like, chilling in a fun place. And now this, like, now fucking Ted Cruz is, like, trying to dunk on us in Twitter for a conversation he wasn't present for.
Oh, like,
it's like, what the fuck?
What is How do you, wrong with you, Ted?
What is wrong with you people?
You absolute freak. Like, fucking, oh my God, you posting addict. It's so weird. Go log off. Like, go write a bad law that everyone will hate.
I will make this promise right now. I have made a lot of posts on Twitter that I regret and that were bad takes. I do. I would say at least once a week I have a bad take on Twitter.
You gotta, everyone's got their bad takes.
Yeah, and I'm drunk, especially now, especially like after I get back from the riots, like having been like repeatedly flashbanged. I get drunk and I post stuff on Twitter and about half of it's stupid as shit. If I will make this promise now, if I ever get into Congress, I will lock my Twitter account. I will not be a tweeting congressperson. I promise
Robert.
You that.
That's your platform.
I will hire an aide to dispense the necessary information via Twitter that my office has to get out.
Mm-hmm.
I will not be shitposting while in Congress.
I
make that promise to you now.
Well, all right.
And like all politicians, I absolutely won't hold to this.
Do you like your own porn tweets, though?
Guys, Katie, want to take her from here?
Sure. This has been a fun little romp detour. I think that there's some more heavy things that we should talk about before we run this episode into the ground. I want to talk about some alarming things that we've seen happening in the last week. Alarming, to put it mildly. Deaths of black people, of black men, of black trans women. The deaths I want to speak about initially are of Robert Fuller and Malcolm Harsh. Wait, let me make sure I'm saying his name properly. Yeah, okay. You can cut. Wait, I want to make sure I'm saying his name properly. If you guys have not heard about this, over the past week in California and near to LA, but in a suburb, the Antelope Valley, which is a notoriously racist community in California, you know, KKK members live there, white supremacists, and just generally racist and white. Earlier this week, or last week, Robert Fuller, a 24-year-old black man, was found hanging in a tree outside of the city hall. And about a week prior to that, Malcolm had been found hanging from a tree near the library, and these two cities are 50 miles apart. Another black man has gone missing. That one may be mental health related, but this all happened very close to each other in a very short proximity, and in both of the hanging cases, the police immediately called it a suicide. Saying that there have been a spike in suicides because of COVID-19. And they've repeated that a lot. And this has caused a bit of an uproar, you could say. At first, though, nobody was covering it. It took days of people tweeting, and there still is barely any coverage. And it's incredibly distressing. And we don't know. We don't know what actually happened here. I suppose that there's a world where it could be a suicide. It seems highly unlikely, seeing as there's no suicide note. Also, Robert Fuller, the last time he'd been seen alive was at a Black Lives Matter protest, like earlier that day,
I'm
sure, I believe.
There's nothing shady there.
Sure, there's nothing shady there. You know, they say it's a suicide, but how, is there a ladder there? No. The other thing that's really alarming is that they said that there wasn't any camera footage. Unfortunately, no camera footage. However, just people showing up to investigate have already pointed out all the businesses with cameras facing the square. I guess I don't have an ultimate point other than it's distressing and we need to be paying attention and trying to keep people accountable. You know, I started posting about this a lot over the weekend, and I had somebody that I tend to respect, but we differ a lot, telling me that it was irresponsible. Because, you know, he says they are investigating it.
Yeah. Well,
what
it
do
is
you mean?
Yeah, the cops are investigating it.
Oh, good.
Calm
the
down.
Police.
The cops got
the
it.
The police force that they themselves are known as racist. I mean, the one that I didn't mention that I should But it was not a potential lynching, was an unarmed black man that was shot in his home last week by those same cops on a domestic violence call. They say that he ran for their gun. The woman's partner says that three cops were holding him down and the other one shot him. So
interesting.
So the police are looking into it. Okay.
I want to make a brief historical point here. Yeah. I'm currently putting together the first episodes dropped this week of our new Behind the Police series. But I wanted to make a point as part of, like, I haven't even written the episodes yet, but I just did this research. So the United States had a massive lynching problem, like 1890s through like 1920, 30s, around there is like kind of the heyday of lynching in the United States, you know, lynching primarily of black men. And one of the first major successes of modern U.S. police was stopping the lynching epidemic. That was done by law enforcement. And you know how they did it?
How?
By taking the men who, like, lynch mobs would form when, like, somebody in town would, like, randomly accuse a black dude of, like, assaulting a white woman or some other vague crime, right? Like, that was always the thing. And police generally just stood aside and let it happen because kind of they were afraid that the mob would burn down the town or burn down the police station if, you know, they attempted to investigate this. And the way that police stopped lynch mobs was by making it very clear that whenever a black man was accused of a capital crime like that, the police would take him into custody. He would be given a show trial and immediately executed. And so they stopped lynch mobs.
Oh, my God.
By executing black people instead.
So it's problem solved.
You legalized, the lynch mob,
Yeah, we formalized it. Like, we can't have lynch mobs because that's, you know, that's not...
That's anarchy.
Yeah.
But this is a process.
But this is a process. We had a trial where 12 white men said, yes, kill the guy. And then we killed him. And that's better.
And then, I mean... It's just, I guess my point, I don't want to be alarmist.
It's fine police work. Yeah,
it's
sorry.
Fine police work. No, we've seen these massive, peaceful, moving protests. We've seen police riots. We definitely know that white supremacists are out there riled up, infiltrating certain places. If you think that there isn't some sort of pushback that's happening or that might be happening, I think that that's naive. I think that what you're seeing here is a response, I think. I mean, we'll see. I shouldn't say that definitively because we're going
to
see.
But
it's at the very least, it's a possibility. And at the very least, the cops of this police department not saying, oh, look what's happening in the world. Look at the demographics of our community, and to immediately just brush under the rug the possibility that this could be a hate crime is incredibly alarming to me. And I think that we should be aware of it and paying attention and you know, stepping up. I guess that's my
soapbox
rant.
It's unsurprising. It's something I don't like. It's odd to me, the reaction of, like, don't worry, like, you're freaking out over nothing. They said they were investigating it. Like, even just the past couple of weeks should indicate that the cops are fucking liars.
Exactly,
my
point.
All the time, every day, there's literally footage of them tackling somebody and then putting a stick in their hand so they can claim that they were tackling him because he had a stick in his hand.
Again, like, fine police work.
And, like, they are. Okay, great, they're investigating. Well, let's just make sure they know that we're watching. You know?
Yeah.
So that we're...
Yes.
The problem with this, and I made a statement like this on Twitter, because I too am addicted to posting, but, like, the issue is, obviously, no one's going to trust whatever the fucking police say, unless they say this was a lynching, then maybe some people will trust it. But the police have no credibility. The FBI has slightly more than no credibility in the eyes of, I think, most people right now. So I don't think that's going to help either if there's a federal investigation, just because nobody trusts any kind of law enforcement right now. But also, a big citizen investigation on Twitter is not the way to handle this, because it will be done badly.
Because it'll be done badly.
But good, diligent reporters need to figure this shit out. That's what needs to happen, and if I were a good, diligent reporter, I guess I would try to get to the bottom of this. But instead, I'm going to shitpost on Twitter like Ted Cruz.
Well, there are people it. And like part of the...
We have to emulate our heroes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part of, to me, the benefit of Twitter people being outraged and paying attention and saying we need an independent investigation, you know, a second autopsy not done by, you know, their guy is, okay, so now apparently there are calls for the California Attorney General to take up this case and look into it. Okay, that's great. But just taking them at their word, okay, it's likely a COVID suicide, is not going to fly. It's not going to fly.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
That's my time.
Yeah, I mean, especially like the last time they saw him, he was at a protest. It's what we've talked about with like all those Ferguson activists that have disappeared. It's why we talk about like blur people's faces if you're sharing something.
Right.
I don't know. It's alarming.
Welcome to the worst year ever.
Some of us will get through it. Hopefully.
We're not.
But that really does remain to be seen.
We need like a really spooky, slowed down version of our theme song.
Yeah, Cody.
Yeah.
Come on.
Like a
sad one.
Or like a, what was it? Like a Hurt cover, kinda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My year was bad today.
Today was a bad year.
Yeah, exactly. My year was bad today, just like every day. It's all there.
Yeah, it's all there. I want to advance a petition to end the year. Let's say June 30th. We move to 2021, so right? Let's just we've had enough year. It was Ron Perlman and Ted Cruz getting into a Twitter fight about whether or not to wrestle. That made me decide, like, this is, we've maxed out what can be fit in a year.
Counterpoint.
Like, we have to move to 2021 now.
Counterpoint.
Yeah.
Then you're ruining 2021 out of the
gate. It's going to suck, too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, just, yeah. It's,
but we
not
filled this
worst
year up.
Ever, though. Like, we filled it up with terrible stuff, and 2021 is going to be still bad. Not as bad, but just still bad.
It might be as bad.
It's the upward tick. It'll be an upward tick. We're going to reach the Ides of 2020 are July 2nd. All right. So we get to the Ides of 2020. It's the worst day ever. But then everything after that.
I think we should stop making predictions because they come true and it sucks.
I think Ted Cruz is going to call Arnold Schwarzenegger a soy boy before this is all over.
God, I hope so. Oh, man. I hope Arnold Schwarzenegger punches. Who do I want Arnold Schwarzenegger to punch?
Arnold Schwarzenegger
or
spends
in Hatch.
His time
That's
like,
what I
making
want.
TikToks with his pet donkeys now. That's what he does with this guy.
I'd like him to punch a lot of people.
Yeah.
That'd be a charity I could donate
to. He's too busy hand feeding his pet donkeys to post. Like, I'm not even, that's like not even a joke. That's
literally what he's
been doing with his time.
But if he wants to make up for the bad things he did as governor, he can punch Orrin Hatch.
Punch former Senator Orrin Hatch.
And sure, I will forgive him for 19% of the things he did while governor.
You don't want him to punch Mitch McConnell?
I do. I would forgive everything he did as governor if he really landed one good haymaker on Mitch McConnell.
I think this might be a juvenile joke, but I just had this image of him punching Mitch McConnell and his head just kind of receding into that neck, you know?
Yeah.
Like a turtle.
Yeah, he's got a
into
like
his shell.
Like a turtle, yes.
Yeah, he's knocked on his back and he can't roll back over.
Oh, that'd be so good. That seems like a good place to end this episode.
If somebody wants to draw that image for us, I love you.
If somebody wants to just incite a fist fight between Mitch McConnell and Arnold Schwarzenegger, I will also accept that. Mm-hmm.
And then Ted Cruz in the background cheering him on.
That's some 2020 fan fiction right
there. I do want to end by noting the worst thing I've read recently, which is an article with, I think the title was something along the lines of, it might take weeks or even months to know the result of the 2020 election. Like,
oh,
we will not know
God.
On election night because of all the additional mail-in ballots and everything. And, like, they're making the case that, like, this actually means that, you know, we'll be extra certain of the count. But, like, any delay in that result is going to be a fucking nightmare. And we all know it.
Weeks.
Like, election month is going to be fucking hell.
We need to plan something big. for that like, time frame.
Like leave?
Like yeah. Leave the country.
Come back?
What if we,
I don't
what
think
if
that
we,
we're going to be allowed to go to any other countries.
I think the actual right thing to do would be for the government to issue a massive bailout, but with the condition that everyone has to leave the United States mm-hmm. for a month. Like, we all vote, and then we go on vacation in other countries oh for a month. God. All 320 mm-hmm. million of us. Just empty the whole country out. That would be the right play. Just yeah, all yeah. of America's
wipe down
like,
all the surfaces while we're yeah. gone.
God, there's no there's no America this month, y'all. We just can't.
Yeah.
America's canceled. Pause.
Yeah, we're taking a month off.
I'd get behind that, except that the tourists would be a real problem.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a nightmare for the rest of the world. But I do think the rest of the world needs to take one for the team being America.
Come on, international listeners.
Knowing what it's doing in the long run.
Volunteer to house some of us.
Yeah, show some solidarity here.
Yeah.
Fucking Christ.
Grow up. God.
You guys could check us out online at WorstYearPod on Twitter and Instagram, and that's it.
Yeah.
There's a T Public store with stuff in it.
Yeah. Iceland's empty. Let us fill up Iceland.
God, I'd love Iceland.
Yeah, fuck it. What else do you do in Iceland? Let 320 million Americans crash on your couch. It'll be fine.
Come on.
They've only got like 30,000 people. I don't know how many people are in Iceland, but it's not many.
It's not many, and they don't have that many couches. We'll have to figure out the couch situation.
We can go camping.
Yeah.
All right, guys. That's it, I think.
Yep.
Play us out. Us.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.